League's Cup returns to Columbus. Your reigning League's Cup champion Columbus Crew are hosting three matches at Lower.com Field. Come out and watch the Crew take on teams from Liga MX, Toluca, Puebla, and León starting July 29th. Grab your tickets now at ColumbusCrew.com and watch the best in North America battle to keep the trophy at home in Columbus. No ties, only wins. Major League Soccer versus Liga MX. League's Cup returns to Columbus, Ohio. Be there.
You just realized your business needed to hire someone yesterday. How can you find amazing candidates fast? Easy. Just use Indeed. Stop struggling to get your job post seen on other job sites. With Indeed's sponsored jobs, your post jumps to the top of the page for your relevant candidates, so you can reach the people you want faster. According to Indeed data, sponsored jobs posted directly on Indeed have 45% more applications than non-sponsored jobs. Don't wait any longer. Speed up your hiring right now with Indeed. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/PODKATZ13. Just go to Indeed.com/PODKATZ13 right now. And support our show by saying you heard about Indeed on this podcast. Terms and conditions apply. Hiring? Indeed is all you need.
The Vox Markets Podcast. Nothing in this podcast is intended as investment advice, and the people in this podcast may hold positions in the stocks they talk about. Do not buy anything based solely on a tip or recommendation. Please do your own research.
Welcome back, everyone, to The Exchange Live. My name is Paul Hill. I'm delighted again to be able to speak to professional investor and director at Sen Group, Ian Staples. So welcome, Ian.
Hi, good morning.
It's fab having you back on the show, particularly we've had lots of big macro news of late. We had the budget and the presidential election, followed by sort of two interest rate cuts by the Bank of England and the Federal Reserve last week. So putting all that together, looking into the next 12 months, particularly as we're, you know, heading into 2025, and we've had a pickup in M&A just recently, what's your sort of outlook for equities going forward? And we, obviously we had some M&A as well recently.
I think it, I think the interest rate environment is certainly beneficial to the environment. I think it was perhaps more interesting to look at the gilt market. There's quite a spread. Versus even Italian bonds in UK 10-year gilts. So the gilt market is certainly taking quite a negative view of the spend and taxation plans of the new Labour government. So therefore, I think even though you've got the interest rates trying to help, the discount rate for equities is still relatively elevated if you look at it, consider it over the last 10 years. So I think in terms of the outlook, what you're going to need is exceptionally strong, efficient companies in which to invest, who've got excellent relationships with their customers and their suppliers, and also a very strong internal culture, but also can execute well. This all sounds very obvious, but I think certainly with more costs coming, thanks to the new government wanting to get in the way rather than letting businesses get on and do their own stuff, it's going to become ever more important that the quality of execution and the quality of management remains very high, and therefore trying to understand and appraise which companies exhibit those qualities and then go on and invest in them.
Yeah. Well, I guess, though, in the UK, though, we are lucky enough or unlucky enough, it depends how you want to look at it, but the valuations of UK stocks are very much cheaper than they are in the US, around about half, particularly if you look at it on a PEG ratio basis. I think the S&P trades at about 1.8, 1.9 times PEG, whereas small caps in the UK are about 0.6, 0.7, 0.8, so significantly less. And we are now seeing, as I say, we had a takeover bid this morning from Volex to look at on TT Electronics. And earlier in the week, we had Aquis Exchange getting an all-cash bid as well from another exchange. So how do you sort of put the difficulties ahead alongside, obviously, the cheaper valuations in the UK?
Well, I think the UK has been very unpopular on a relative basis versus other jurisdictions for quite some period of time now. The reasons for which have been debated in the press, and indeed, the move this week by the Chancellor to force the local government pensions into eight groups and then to try and invest some of that money back into the UK. You know, sort of the allocation to UK equities in that group, I think, is less than 1%, which 20 years ago, it was 39%. So you've seen this huge structural shift away from UK equities, which has accelerated over the last few years. And for example, you've seen 41 months of consecutive retail outflows out of UK equities, which is just shocking. So that's, you really haven't got an underpinning or a healthy equity market. And therefore, I think the sort of valuations relative to other markets, it will be at a discount. And therefore, I think you are going to see continued M&A of good businesses. Volex is arguing this morning that TT perhaps wasn't as tightly run as it could have been. Made a point about the 420 million it's spent since it sold its transportation division in 2017. And really, you know, it shows that Lord Rothschild's done quite a job on Volex, really tightened that up since he stepped in there. And then I think it just goes back to my opening remarks about the quality of execution and the rigor of, with which that is pursued is really the sort of the companies to back over the next year.
Good. Okay, well, that's a great segue to one stock to have a look at. Let's move to Funding Circle, which itself has gone through a bit of a turnaround. It's sort of like a P2P, or traditionally was a P2P lender, now does sort of, it takes institutional money and places that into companies, but acts as the conduit rather than actually on its balance sheet. Had a UK and US business. It decided to shed its US business just recently, and now is a profitable UK arm. And the shares have done very well. What's your sort of your latest on Funding Circle? Because I know you talked about it last time, and it's still doing very well.
Yeah. I thought I'd try and be disciplined rather than ignore the good ones or the bad ones that I talked about last time. Let's actually follow up and see whether what I talk about actually comes about. And I think this is a particularly striking example of the themes we started our chat with, because it's been going absolutely great guns under the leadership of the CEO, Lisa Jacobs. She's really delivering on the plan to be a simpler, leaner, and a sort of more profitable while continuing to show strong growth. They got out of the US, I think, at a gain of 10 million.
Yeah.
And over the course of the summer, simplified and streamlined the business. So they're delivering 15 million of annualized savings in 2025. And it's not so hardly surprising that they delivered upgraded guidance to be profitable for the full year and will commence another share buyback of 25 million following the conclusion of the current 25 million. So this is one to really get behind.
Yeah. And how do you think given the economic backdrop you talked about, the sort of the lending environment is going to be for people like Funding Circle? Because obviously it's sort of like finding avenues to place institutional money with sort of small, medium-sized companies, etc. Their borrowing capacity, their appetite for borrowing. How do you see that being impacted?
Well, certainly, there's always going to be demand for capital for SMEs. The absolutely crucial thing for Funding Circle is the credit scorecard, which it uses to analyse the SMEs. They will, of course, I'm sure, have a macroeconomic overlay in terms of what they think the direction of the economy is. But I'm sure they also have a very detailed set of rules and algorithms which go off to companies' house and analyze, as well as look at the ratings for the larger companies, so they can actually charge an appropriate interest rate appropriate to the risk that they're taking in lending to that company. You know, for example, I think they've lent money, this is in the public domain, they've lent money to Jamie George, the England rugby captain.
Why did he need some money?
Yeah, no, he apparently, I mean, of course, these players need to generate business outside of their playing thing. So he's got a chain of gyms with a couple of mates, I think, 10 gyms around the country. And that's what he's his company, or the company he's involved with, has, I think, borrowed money from Funding Circle to expand the chain of gyms.
Right.
So, okay. You know, it's sort of, there's demand for capital.
Yeah, no, I think you're probably right. Good. Well, I mean, it just seemed to be an excellent turnaround story, and the shares have responded favourably, but probably lots more to go. If any, just a reminder for the audience, if anybody wants to ask a question for Ian, then please drop it into the chat box. We've got one from Steve Waters. He's asking about big technologies, and this has been a sort of darling. I think it does sort of like prisoner sort of tagging, etc., electronic tagging. It does it across the world in terms of Australia and New Zealand and stuff. It listed a few years ago and has actually done pretty well, but the shares have, you know, performed poorly. How do you see theirs, their prospects going forward?
Well, I think they lost a contract, didn't they, a while ago, which wasn't wasn't well received. And I think the thought was they'd be able to winkle out Serco from the UK justice. And that's not come to pass. But I think, unfortunately, the creaking prison populations around the world, certainly in places such as Australia, New Zealand, Canada, and they've also got an office in Latin America, which I think have got their own problems with various countries there, got their own problems with keeping the peace and locking up convicted people. So I think the long-term outlook for this is very strong. They do got some very clever technology. What they can do is that they've developed a sensor which goes onto the tag, which detects if you drink alcohol or if you enjoy a bit of wacky backy. They're also developing one for that.
That'll be big at Christmas, won't it?
No.
It'll be with high demand.
Yeah, I mean, very often it's unfortunate that a man might be locked up because he's too fond of the drink, and when he's under the influence, he assaults his partner, and that's why he's quite rightly in prison. But what they can do with the tag is that they can, part of his parole, say don't go within 2 miles of your former partner and stay off the hooch. And if what the tag will do is, if he enjoys his 6 pints of Stella, and he's back in chokey. I think it's the winner.
Yeah, no, I used to quite like 6 pints of Stella, but I can't do it anymore. I'm a bit of a wimp now, unfortunately. Yeah, I think that contract they lost actually was in South America, wasn't it? Colombia?
Sorry.
Yeah, no, it was. Well, it was somewhere down there. But okay, let's move to another one within the news today, actually. Industrial stocks, solid state. And it said it hasn't lost the contract, but it's had a big defence order deferred from this year into future periods, affected by the UK's strategic defence review, which has been pushed to the right until the summer. So it's out of its control and really come from left field. But the shares have fallen about 30% this morning. How do you see this one? It just basically rugged industrial electronics, software, hardware for defence and industrial type applications that need really quite strong and, as I say, robust types of electronics.
Well, I think this is actually a very, very good business that's very tightly run. If you look at the balance sheet, it's only got net debt of something like 3 million or 4 million.
Yeah, that's right.
So you're seeing, I think there's a downgrade to EPS this morning of around about 58-60%.
Yeah.
The fact that this is a deferral rather than a loss, and it's right shifting. And of course, the market is taking it badly. But a 30% fall in the context of a 60% downgrade suggests that people are looking through this, and the ability of Gary Marsh and his team to actually be able to deliver on the contract when the checkbooks reopen. So whilst it's painful, it's never nice to look at a 30% fall on the share price. This is actually a good time to get involved. If you're not in solid state, go and do some work. I'd be buying the shares if I wasn't in them.
Yeah, I think they have bounced from their low. I think it hit about 120 this morning, so they've gone up to about sort of 140 on that. But yeah. I'm with you, it's a quality business. I guess the broader question is, if the government is running a defence strategic review and it's pushed it all the way to the summer, are there any other companies in the defence sector that are quite exposed to the UK MOD and that, I don't know, Chemring or, you know, basically BAE or all these other defence companies or even electronic suppliers who we might need to think about if there are any read across?
Yeah, well, it's from BAE Systems down, isn't it? BAE is probably quite big and quite chunky, so
yeah,
it'll probably ride out the storm given the size of its massive order book. Chemring has got, of course, has got exposure, but it's got that wonderful line of work in Roke, so I'll probably ride out there. You got a great company like Cohort, but they do training as well. You know, they're very diversified. Sort of four or five streams to that business. So I would imagine that you know, this is quite specific. I mean, it's a sort of highlights the risk of defence contracting, or reminds everyone that it's not a one-way street. So it's just to, I think, sharpen the pencils on your defence stocks to make sure that risk or that question is covered when you do your homework.
Yeah, no, I would agree. Got a quick follow-up question from David Amish, just on the Volex we talked about. I guess it's the question comes down to, do you think this is going to happen, this takeover between Volex and TT? Or will Lord Rothschild need to actually open his pockets a bit further?
Well, he's obviously gone down the back of the city in the morning smoking room and found some cash, hasn't he? So good on him.
Well, he's quite rich himself, isn't he? He's not short of a bubble too.
No, it's he obviously likes to get out the house and do stuff, so good for him. No, I think, I mean, you're looking at, you know, sort of joking aside, you're looking at what, a 74% premium to the undisturbed price?
Yeah.
Or something like that. You've got TT shares at an all-time low. You had quite a good trading update yesterday. You had news of the FD retiring, so it feels to me that this one's running out of legs. Yeah, there you go.
Yeah.
So you might argue it's opportunistic, but really the TT's author of its own woes, and people will be quite relieved to have it taken off their hands.
Yeah, that's what the share price is saying, isn't it? It's saying actually there's a good chance of it actually concluding.
Yep.
Okay, good. Let's go back to the financial sector. One which has done really well is XPS Pensions. Now, we've had the budget, and of course, we all know Rachel Reeve decided to throw a missile into all the pension systems. So everybody we've got to think about their inheritance tax and all this sort of stuff and change the rules. And now he's also thinking about amalgamating all the public sector. How does this sort of all flow through for, you know, XPS Pensions and your view going forward of the business, because it has done really well over the last few years?
Yeah, I think they'd be rubbing their hands with glee, but they're far too polite and far too professional to say so. Basically, they've got their interims on the 21st.
Yeah,
Thursday of next week. So we'll find out then. I think when you think about how they've actually delivered that wonderful chart that you've just put up, fabulous, isn't it? They've built a brilliant business in sort of pensions administration, which has seen strong growth thanks to project work for public sector clients. That's only going to get more complicated over the next 12, 18 months. It's moving clients to its own proprietary admin platform. So when things change or when things get complicated, people want the hand holding. XPS has got all these wonderful relationships really deep inside organizations, public and private sector. So it's only going to help them. Also, they've got advisory services driven by client demand. They've got expansion of services, and they've also been putting through price increases over the last 12, 18 months. And this is all really sort of knitting together. You know, they had a trading update mid-October, which put through upgrades, which was 2 weeks, 3 weeks before the budget. So they're clearly feeling very positive about the future. It's perhaps the the one way of government, the one way of playing a sort of a command and control government, actually making money from it. XPS is a brilliant way of playing a meddlesome Labour government.
Yeah, I mean, I'm with you. It's sort of like, it's one of those strange things. Pensions should be sort of stable, long-term, pretty dull, pretty boring in terms of changes. But actually, they're pretty exciting. And there's a lot of tightening regulation. There's a lot of changing regulation, a lot of meddling. And on that base, anybody in the intermediary who's an expert in this thing can even help people like me and you, who are supposedly be professionals, just find out the best tax-efficient way of managing our pensions and long-term. And it's sort of like, it seems like a no-brainer for them.
Yes, no, absolutely. Absolutely. I mean, it's a bit like your retail banking. It should be dry as dust.
Yeah.
No, because of the changes and the complications and the seeming thought that everyone, if you're actually responsible and save for a rainy day or for later on in your span on this earth, then it deserves to be raided. It seems odd to me, but there we go. XPS is doing very nicely out of it. Thank you.
Yeah. Another one which is doing well out of the budget, and we've got a bit of a budget spike here as well, is FRP Advisory, which is all known for its sort of restructuring. But frankly, again, high net worth individuals will be looking for sort of advice about whether they, and non-doms, about whether they should go abroad, whether they should, how they should manage their estate, how they should manage their finances, just tax efficiency, etc. Because it's all been thrown up into the air again. And this is, I'm going to put the chart up, and this is one big spike just recently. But anyway, putting all that together, how do you see sort of FRP? Because, it traditionally is in sort of restructuring, but frankly, is going to do well anyway, I think, of the whole lot.
Yeah. Again, I mean, the trend's pretty clear, isn't it? I mean, it goes. It's a bit cyclical, but it's sort of going from bottom left to top right, which is what we like. I think not only are you going to see restructurings in terms of sort of high net worth taking their money out of the country, I think unfortunately you're also going to see businesses which were quite close to the wire, shall we say, being impacted by the increase in national insurance. So you're going to see closures. Unfortunately, you're going to see people moving into involuntary administration. You're going to see businesses wanting to merge, or businesses trying to restructure themselves, or similar overlaps with other companies. And FRP is brilliantly placed to be able to take part in that work and make money from the ripples that continue to ripple across the pond of UK commercial life, thanks to the pound of concrete that got thrown in the pond with the budget. So, this is a company that had a great AGM statement at the end of September, trading in line. They're very good at integrating acquired businesses which have got a sort of regional expertise in restructuring. So they've made 11 acquisitions since IPO, and they've all seemingly been tucked into the group. They got an absolutely laser focus on cash and cash collection. Whilst most people that look at stocks obsess about the P&L, the profit and loss account, when you sit down with these guys and talk to them, it's just cash, 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 cash collection.
Yeah.
How much cash have we expended in doing the work, and have we recovered it, and are we doing it at the right rate? This is one tightly run business. Very impressive. Very impressive indeed.
You raise a really good point, actually, because in the budget, obviously with the NI going, employers NI, any company with thin margins, whether they be contractors like ISG, which went bust a few weeks or a couple of months ago, but also obviously in the retail, hotels, anybody with large employee bases, particularly in part time, that now getting caught by that reduction from 10,000 to 5,000 in the start point that NI has made, their costs are going to go up. And unless they've got pricing power, and because they've got slim margins, it means they haven't, they're going to, they're, you're right, they're going to really struggle, aren't they? And they're going to come to people like FRP.
Yeah. I mean, it's, you know, you sort of the cost in hospitality, for example. I read something in the press that I think it was Wetherspoons was saying it was £2,500. Was it?
Yeah.
£2,500 per employee extra they're going to have to give to the government in tax. You're seeing also perhaps not just hospitality, but you're seeing the impact on GPs. Mm-hmm. You know, they're not.
Yes, you are. Yeah.
They've been encouraged to set up a private company, then contract with the NHS to deliver frontline services. But they're going to be hit by the NI. So you're seeing a hit there. I mean, what is people delivering, you know, crucial healthcare of anything between £75,000 and £100,000 per practice? Mm. And you got most of the staff on minimum working age, and just the doctors going, this is crazy. So I think across the board, you're going to see a contraction of margins, but you're also going to see, you know, businesses employ less people and we're going to become less efficient. I mean, is that really what you intended? You know, people can't get a part-time job. They're going to be, quite frankly, sitting on their posteriors.
Yeah, that's going to be a memorable headline in the Daily Mail, isn't it? It's going to be first GP going bust because of Rachel Reeves. Yeah. that's going to change the political landscape.
Yeah, and it's just bonkers. And you know, sort of, even if it is just a part-time job, actually getting out and working gives you an identity. Even if it is quite a, you know, humble job of, you know, sort of cleaning tables or pulling pints, it's work.
Yeah,
and it just seems crazy to me.
Yeah, and actually another one would be the 7 pints that you talked about. Wetherspoons charges £2,000 for 7 pints of Stella. would be another one because of the budget. Yeah. Okay, let's move on. We've got another question coming from Steve Walsh. He's asking quick updates on Ashtead Technologies, which is basically a marine rental firm out in the North Sea, doing for offshore oil and gas, but also for offshore wind as well, does submersibles and stuff. And the share price was a real darling up to about 12 months ago, but has come off largely, I guess, as a reflection of the tax raising revenues, the extra tax they put onto oil and gas exploration in the UK, and the reducing oil price as well. But anyway, I don't know whether you've been tracking this one, but it has fallen quite noticeably, actually.
Well, it was a darling, wasn't it?
Yeah.
It had performed very well. I think there's a concern about what it can do with the Labour government trying to shut down.
Yeah. Oh, no.
Sorry, I just can't. North Sea oil production, even though we can, you know, not quite get it out of the ground for free, but hey. This is a company that's got, you know, sort of set of excellent relationships with those people, and I think it would certainly be an interesting point now, I think, to get back involved, because even if they go for this crazy net zero, which once you scratch the surface, we just haven't got the infrastructure to do it or deliver it. There's going to be an awful lot of wind turbines offshore, which are going to need construction and maintenance. And Ashtead Tech is just perfectly positioned to do that work, and it's got the kit. It was a one-way trade for a long time. It's certainly more complicated now, but I'd be happy to back that team to navigate this current sticky patch. It's the uncertainty, because you've got a lack of thought, a lack of understanding about how power is generated and what the country needs to run. You got people that don't understand what baseload electricity generation means. So they're switching the nuclear off without pushing and they seem to think that if you live in a leafy suburb of northern London and drink green tea, You know, we should all live in wigwams and eat grass.
I'm with you. I think just basically the drop in the share price is just a reflection of oilfield services companies. They've all fallen, whether it's been, you know, Schlumberger, whether it's been Halliburton, you know, there's another big one in the States, or alternatively like things like Hunting. They've all gone the same way. And, you know, it's just as a sentiment thing. Okay, let's move sectors. Let's go into healthcare. We've got HVivo, which does the challenge trial business for healthy, takes in healthy patients, and then exposes them to viruses that have been, sort of expose them to a virus, and then you inject a vaccine that helps them recover and see out the consequences. How did you see this one? The shares continue to do really well, actually.
Yeah, this is, again, it's the theme that we started with.
Yeah.
Strong management team with a great great set of relationships. And this one, it's all down to the CEO, Mo Khan. He really got hold of this since he took over as CEO several years ago. The fact that you have got this concept of these challenge trials being able to tell organizations how their vaccine will work with a relatively small number of patients, or sort of human guinea pigs, means that the fact that they've been able to prove that it works, it's scientifically robust. You know, unsurprisingly, you saw recent results, you know, sales up 31%, EBITDA 68%, EBITDA margin increasing by 5.5 percentage points to 24.5. You've got a net cash of 37 million at the end of June 24. And now you've got a state-of-the-art facility in Canary Wharf, opened and fully operational. You're just going to see this wonderful flywheel effect that when you get someone with really good execution skills with a great product, they get ever better, they get ever stronger, they develop, they grow, they invest. And hey presto, they just get bigger and bigger and margins stay robust. You've got full year EBITDA margins to the upper end of expectations. And they've got 2024 100% fully contracted. And they want revenues of 100 million by 2028, which I think they will do quite comfortably. And really, this one's just a let it run, let it rip.
Yeah, and I'll just look at the trade. It trades at about 9x EBITDA, which, given basically where it is as a contract research organization with specific skills and is growing so fast, that's a reasonable, that's a cheap valuation, actually. That's pretty good value.
Yeah, absolutely.
Yeah. Okay, let's move again to the sector. So we go to consumer. We've got Hollywood Bowl, which is the UK's number one bowling alley business. It's also expanding out into Canada. And I guess the sort of like, how do you see its prospects going forward, given that obviously they're going to have to absorb quite a lot of that NI extra cost for employers?
I think, again, this for me is the way to play, sort of one of the best ways to play UK leisure, because it's extremely well run. They will, of course, have to wear the NI, just like everyone else. But I think the important thing to note is here that they've got a very strong UK base, but they've now got a Canada stream as well. And they did 7 refurbs in the UK and 4 in Canada over the past year. Got 4 new centres added in the UK and four in Canada. So that means they've got 72 places in the UK and 13 in Canada. So you've got a reasonable part of the group now quite separate from the dynamics in the UK. But funnily enough, people on a rainy day evening like to go and meet with mates, have a coffee, or perhaps not 6 pints of Stella, but have a beer and a laugh, and enjoy themselves. If they got, here again is a great example of a management team that's delivering on its core sort of attribute of delivering nice places to go to with your family or with your mates. They basically run it like an airline that's on the ground all the time. So they think very carefully about the sort of the the shoulder periods in up to peak usage, how they get people into their centres and make people spend money. So, you know, a bored mum or a bored dad at the wit's end during the half-term holidays, take the kids. Now, you don't necessarily want to take them at 7 o'clock in the evening when it's at its busiest, but there might well be a deal on it. Take them at 3 p.m, get a fizzy drink and, you know, have an hour's bowling. Very, very clever. They got net cash of 29 million at the year end. And really, I think this is a business that will continue to go from strength to strength.
Yeah. And given it's a very affordable sort of proposition for families, then if they have to push the price up 3 or 4%, then I don't think that's going to be a major issue. I think people absorb it. If it's £10 or £10.50, £10.50 for a family, it's still cheap, isn't it?
Absolutely. Absolutely. Yeah.
Particularly compared to Wetherspoon's £2,000 for 7 pints of Stella. Okay. Another one in the consumer sector, which is, it's just been a real thoroughbred Shearguard. This one is War Paint. And it's got its two brands, Technic and W7, I think it is, brands. Anyway, it's expanded, it's gone through the UK to Europe and to the States, got all the big sort of multiples on board. The story's done really well, lots of good like-for-like growth, profitable, etc. They have had a few direct-to-sales of late. So how do you sort of like look at that, when you put all that together, how do you see the share price going forward?
I think the director sales is, well done, boys, you've earned it.
Yeah, I think you're probably right.
Yeah, go and enjoy the money. You've worked jolly hard over the past few years. So you saw the interims to June, group sales up 25%, UK up 17%, international 30%. You got gross profit margin up 334 bips to 42.5%. You know, this is due to successful launches, new product lines, sourcing and volume savings, got growing e-commerce revenues and increased US profitability. So, you know, they've really tapped in to the trend for quality, value-led cosmetics in the UK and overseas. They're in discussions with more major retailers globally to get their stock into prominent positions in stores, or just open up a new account with major retailers. And you know, you're seeing global cosmetic customers moving to more value and orientated brands, but War Paint's global market share, shall we say, remains modest. And I think really that means there's substantial opportunities for further growth. And it's got absolutely no debt on the balance sheet, cash of £5.5 million. Yeah. Now, here's yet another company run by founders. You've still got, despite the sales, I hope they enjoy it. Still got a substantial skin in the game. And you've got these growth avenues that we talked about, e-commerce and US being especially interesting.
Yeah. Good. Okay, we've got a question coming in from Harish Hirani. I don't know whether you've ever looked at Made Tech Group at all. Have you ever looked at that one? I don't even know what they do. No. Sorry about that, Hamish. No, I'm not familiar with that one either. Okay, let's go. Let's go to a company that just put effectively a profit upgrade today, MP Evans, which does sort of like palm oil, sustainable palm oil production. It's a grower of palm oil out in, I think is it Malaysia or Indonesia or something like that.
And that's right.
Yeah, they've had a tremendous dividend record, but they've upgraded. Do you want to take us through the story here? Because it does seem to be getting better and better.
Yes, I mean, this is buy and hold forever. If you've got a PA IHT portfolio, this should be at least 5% of that portfolio, because like anyone, it has its ups and downs. But that the dividend growth rate
seems to have gone one way to this last year or so.
Well, there you go. Yeah. I mean, you had a very strong trading statement this morning, thanks to the continuing strong palm oil price. Here's yet another company with only 1% net gearing. So that's about net debt of about $7 million. They see strong increase in total production crude palm oil. They've got a 24% increase in certified sustainable production. And really, you're just going to see this company continue to go from strength to strength.
How do you build in the sort of the commodity risk in it? Because obviously it depends on the commodity price. It also depends on export, sort of like, you know, tariffs and taxes from the country. That comes down to food sort of security by that country. And also, you know, sort of climate change. You know, you might have you might get the commodity right, you might get the export right, you might get the company right, but all of a sudden you get a big hurricane in where the grower is, and then you get blasted out.
Yeah, I think certainly, you know, the Indonesia or Malaysia, that part of the world, you certainly get the occasional cyclone. The impact can be meaningful, but it's certainly the sort of weather around Port Stanley, which is where MP Evans has a significant part of its business, is quite stable.
That's not Port Stanley in the Falklands there. That's Port Stanley out in Asia. There's another one, isn't there?
Sorry, Port Arthur.
Port Arthur, oh, okay.
That's it, Port Arthur, yeah. No, I don't think you could grow palm oil in the Falklands.
I thought the sheep there, isn't there?
Yeah, that's it, sheep. Yeah, there's more sheep than people, I think.
Yeah.
And the thing is that I've been looking at palm oil palm oil companies for quite a long time now, and there's been a shift over the last 10 years of sort of increasing use of palm oil, which underpins its use in primarily in the preparation of foodstuffs. And it goes into a lot of processed food. So if you enjoy a Mr. Kipling cake later on this morning with your cup of tea, it'll have palm oil in there somewhere. Also, you get a lot of usage in, obviously, not just in processed food, but just in cooking generally. And basically, the world is getting bigger and it's getting richer. And therefore, the sort of the way in which food is prepared changes. And that's only ever been good for palm oil over the past 15 years. So over that sort of length of time, it can only be a positive. There will, of course, you know, sort of if you look on a weekly basis or try and do it like that, then you're going to get yourself in a right old pickle. But if you take a 2 or 3 year view, palm oil always does well. Well-run company like MP Evans, which is, well, it's not been around forever, but it certainly seems like that. You know, I think they celebrated their 150 years a couple of years ago. So, you know, here's a company that, you know, looks after its growers, looks after its people, and unsurprisingly, the dividend's rather good.
Yeah, no, the Griffin, it's gone up 30%. Sorry, it's gone up for 30 years, I think. But do you know why the palm oil price has actually increased this year? Because they were indicating not long ago they thought it was going to be soft, but that seems to have gone. There must have had a climate change event elsewhere where they grow, I don't know, crops of palm oil, I guess.
Yeah, it can. You know, you can argue until you're blue in the face about El Nino or La Nina, the sort of the relative availability. But I prefer to take, you know, sort of the
longer term view. Yeah, okay. All right, let's move sexist to another one. We've got ZigUp, which is, first of all, can you explain why they call themselves ZigUp? It's the old Ready Northgate white van type business that effectively hires out vans to people or sells them and then does the services, does the repairs, does the insurance for them. So it's all like all in one shop, or, you know, go-to player for sort of commercial vehicles. How are you seeing this one?
I think, well, they got interims due on the 4th of December.
Yeah.
They continue to invest in new sites in Spain, UK and Ireland. So you've got a very strong management team. Investing, you've also got them developing their tech to make sure it's a one chain or sort of a integrated offering across a vehicle life cycle. You got supply chains normalizing, and you got inflation starting to ease, and therefore you've got sort of the vehicle repair and replacement higher time frames reducing, which can only be good for Zigup. New vehicle supply greatly improved in recent months, so it plans to replace the fleet and therefore satisfying demand for light commercial vehicles. Therefore, the fleet should become younger across the geographies. So really, I think it's all to play for. And now is a very interesting time in the share price and the timing, given these normalizing dynamics and continuing growth and focus on the returns on capital that they do are very strict about in the fleet, that I think this is a one to have a good, long, hard look at.
And any ideas why the share price has been so weak of late? Because other than obviously we've had the election, but it's just kept on seemingly going down. Is it because people are starting to think that the actual environment for, you know, renting out and leasing out sort of commercial vehicles is weaker? Because you've just gone through the margins and the cheaper and lesser inflation, and actually it should be the other way around.
Yeah, I think it's basically that, quite frankly, they've, you know, sort of been very honest with the market and talking about these, you know, sort of lengthened supply chains and inflation. But the fact that they're now being flushed out of the system should see it flip.
Yeah, no, 7% dividend yield, PE ratio 7. I mean, you know, dividend yield the same as a PE ratio, unless they're going to have a profit warning. That seems like crazy, stupid, too cheap, doesn't it?
Yeah, just wrong.
Yeah. Okay, got another question coming in from Sarjay H71. I don't know whether you know anything about Lion Trust Asset Management or can say a few words about the asset managers, because they've had such a hard, you know, space to be in terms of passives really decimating a lot of the active fund managers. And I know they've been caught in the crosshairs.
Yeah, I think the asset management space is a very challenging one. You know, it doesn't matter whether you're a boutique like Lion Trust, or you're a behemoth like Schroders, or even a Jupiter. It's a bit like, you know, if you put them all next to one another, it's a bit like sort of watching five or six ice cubes melt in a glass in a hot summer's day. You just wonder which one's going to disappear. You don't know, but it is just like watching ice cubes melt. We spoke earlier on in this chat about the rate of retail outflows out of the UK. So you've got a very negative sort of overlay, 41 or 42 consecutive months. You've got pause point, the rise of the passives. You've got a lot of institutional clients allocating capital away from active regional strategies to global passive ones. You've got the rise, or the continuing rise, of the ETFs, and really the model that the active fund managers offer in terms of outperformance through active management and regional focus is one which the holders of the capital or the allocators of the capital, a majority of them, do not subscribe to it.
Yeah.
And then therefore you're seeing the share price that Paul very kindly put up.
Yeah. No, I mean, I think it's going to be consolidation continued in that sector, because people are going to get bigger and to get economies of scale. I am actually, as an investor, quite concerned at some point in time. I think there's going to be a moment of truth, because of so much money being put into dumb money like passives, etc., just following what the price discovery is elsewhere, how prices move. At some point, and we had it in 2010, we had a flash crash, but I think we could get the mother of all flash crashes at some moment, because you get ETFs off ETFs off ETFs, derivatives off derivatives off derivatives, and they're all centering on certain stocks. They'll either be AI, they'll either be tech, they'll either be some other passive, etc. And I think if you looked at sort of how many ETFs were, you know, you compared how many ETFs were on the UK banking sector or UK oil sector or something like that compared to US tech, AI, it'd be like tens of thousands to one more, you know, obviously in those areas. And all you need is at some moment somebody saying, actually, this is crazy. And we saw it with the dot-com crash. back in March 2000. I think there's going to be a moment of truth at some point in time, because you can't just have perpetually dumb money trading dumb money, no price discovery.
No, ultimately, you've got these two competing factors, haven't you? You've got, certainly in the UK, you've got perhaps the rise of passives, but also against also the money being pulled out of the market. So where is the incentive for value to be ascribed to companies that deserve it? I mean, you mentioned a PEG ratio in the sort of what, the 0.5 to 1 range, and you said the US was what, 1.5 or something, so I can't remember.
Yeah, 1.5 to 2, yeah.
1.5 to 2. So you've got this sort of great disparity, but it's the shallowness of the UK market that is causing the concern. So is the cause for concern. So, you know, you, in an equity market such as the US, I think there's some time before that clash that you talk about continues. But in the UK, there will come a point, unless something changes, that the London stock market will really become, you know, for the want of a better phrase, a bit like Dublin. You know, there used to be stock markets in Manchester and Edinburgh, and as well as London, and then they all consolidated and went to London. Well, perhaps you're going to see exchanges around Europe consolidate. So you're going to see Oslo, Paris, Berlin, those consolidate into one, Milan, and then actually get some sort of depth to the market again, which can support both what people want in terms of the ETFs, but also a market where correct price discovery goes on, and companies can use it to access capital to grow.
Mm. I'll tell you, I'm going to make a prediction. In the next 5 years, we're going to see a huge flash crash, and it'll be, we saw a mini one with the unwind of the yen carry trade at the start of August, which lasted about 24 hours, but not the 10 bells out of the US NASDAQ. At some point, we'll see the moment of truth for Bitcoin. Somebody will make more than 21 million Bitcoins. They'll break into the system, and that will decimate the value, which will then trigger a shed load of people to do, you know, to dump their tech stocks because they're in the same sort of thing. Or alternatively, you'll have some other major event that will break, you know, basically the margin that people buy them. Anyway, that's there'll be an opportunity that will. Okay, let's move to another stock that you rightly pointed out a couple of times, Keller, which is a geotechnical piling business, which is traditionally heartland in the UK, but has absolutely just moonshot because of the US with all their construction and infrastructure they've been putting in. They've done really well, and I tip my hat there. And I'm going to put the share price up. And for a construction business or a builder, I've never seen a chart quite like this. It's absolutely fabulous.
Yeah, it's staggering, isn't it?
Yeah,
absolutely staggering.
Yeah,
it had a trading update yesterday, which you can see. I think the share price came off what, 12% or something.
Yeah,
it talked
yeah.
about. I think there were some challenging trading conditions in some parts of its overseas businesses, certainly in perhaps in, I think it was in the US and a bit in Australia, wasn't it? But this share price chart is testament to the CEO and his team. We changed the team when he came in, Michael Speakman. He used to be an FD at CAPE, which was another sort of belt and braces business. Mm. He came into Keller, and this is a company that had great expertise in geotechnical construction. So if you wanted to reclaim land on the edge of Tokyo Airport from the sea, Keller could go and do it. If you wanted to go and build a skyscraper in ground that's, shall we say, got a lot of clay and not much granite, Keller could tell you whether you to do it or not, or just don't be so stupid and go and build elsewhere. So they had this wonderful set of expertise, but they, shall we just say, perhaps lacking in commercial focus. And what Michael Speakman did when he came in, he said, well, there's this layer of the company that had all these great relationships and know-how and expertise, but there's a sort of impermeable layer of we can't really call it management, but it was just setting the ways of doing things, which didn't meant work got done, but it wasn't for the best, always with the best commercial outcome. He, a couple of CEOs before him, tried and failed to change that layer. And they went native and became like the this sort of bureaucratic, the Keller way. Speakman, being Mr. Speakman, just went in and just said, no. He said, it's either my way or the highway. And he just ripped it out, put in a new set of systems and processes. Didn't tell anybody, but just basically said, we're going to do it this way in terms of commercial focus. Didn't tell the market. But then upgrade started and work started being run, being won, run and delivered in a value creating way. And hey, presto, we're back to the magic flywheel effect. Revenue's up 2% recently to 1.5 million. You go, yeah, big deal. But operating profit up 76% to 113 million. You've got an operating margin up 300 bips to 7.6%. Net debt to EBITDA just 0.3 times. So, you know, what's not to like? Current macroeconomic environment presents opportunities. And unsurprisingly, because of the excellence of the people and the deep, deep technical knowledge, you've got a record 1.6 billion order book. Brilliant.
Yeah. And look on the valuation, even though it's done very well, the shares are still only on 8 times PE, 3.5% dividend yield. I mean, the metrics still look attractive.
Yeah, just carry on. Yeah. Carry on buying.
Good. Another one in the same vein. We've got Renew Holdings, which you've banged the table a couple of times, and I haven't bought. I should have done, but keeps on just pulling the, you know, pulling the right levers. And I mean, you've got the share price. It basically does essential services for things like nuclear, rail, infrastructure, and stuff like this. And it keeps. What's your latest view on this one?
Well, it's just it's more of the same.
Yeah.
You know, you've got, I think the water thing, it's called AMP8.
That's AMP8. Yeah, you're right.
They've got relationships frameworks on that. I think it's COP6 on the railways. They do great work there. You know, it's the sort of work that that can only be done on Christmas Day when the rail network shuts down. You know, if you need to move a bridge, they can do it in 24 hours. So they start work on Christmas Eve at sort of 10 o'clock Christmas Eve, work through the night through Christmas Day, when they can take down the power lines or switch them off, take them down, shift a bridge, tidy up, and then all ready for Boxing Day when you're falling out for your falling out with your relatives on Christmas Day. So, and also they've got nuclear. So they do a lot of work up in Sellafield. So here you've got, again, Paul Scott and his team have done a fantastic job in tightening up the commercial arrangements, commercial deals with their customers. They've got a great, it's quite high value-added construction. That's not so much construction, but maintenance work. If you want to work on the water or if you want to work on the railways, you need highly qualified personnel that have been around. You just can't turn up and work on the railway. You need to sort of go through sort of a bronze, silver, gold accreditation of a bit like flying. You know, you need to do 100 hours in bronze before you can get onto your silver, which is then you get a pay rise, but you've also proven your health and safety credentials. They've got, you know, this huge, huge group of people that are great at this, and they mop up. Occasionally there's a family firm that's got an expertise in one particular part of maintaining the water treatment. You know, son or daughter's not interested in taking over dad's firm, and Renew pick it up, and the expertise goes into the system. So, you know, you've got a balance sheet, net cash at the end of September, which was ahead of expectations. You've got strong organic growth across the business, and it's got robust order book, plus you've got a lot of committed infrastructure spending coming. So a lot of the time Renew is tapped into their long-term operating budgets of the clients rather than just one-off project work. Yeah. So it's one to back.
Yeah, it's pretty recession resilient as well, isn't it? Because it's essential. You can't just turn off maintenance for a nuclear power station. Wouldn't be a good idea.
No glowing in the dark, thank you.
Exactly, yeah. Okay, just as a reminder, if anybody wants to ask Ian a final question, then please put it in. Now, I've got one here, Ian, quite a tough one. Looking in through the Staples crystal ball for next year, what's your sort of your best or most exciting sort of stock idea for 2025?
I think the 2025, with all the what we've been talking about, it's going to be quite a dry thing, because there's going to be lots of nitty gritty changes that are going to go on in the background. So I'm going to say, there's one of three we've spoken about.
Yeah.
Today you've got Funding Circle, XPS, or FRP Advisory.
Yeah.
Really depending on your view, I think they're all going to do really well. For me, it's XPS pensions.
Yeah, I'm with you. I mean, I'm not a big investor in financial services, but given what the budget have done, it's just thrown all the balls into the air across the regulatory perspective. Then it's got to just create huge amounts of extra work for that whole sector. Must do.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah. Absolutely.
Big tailwind. Okay, brilliant. Well, thanks again, Ian. Hope you have a brilliant Christmas. Keep off the 7 pints of Stella on a night before.
Definitely.
It'll cost you $2,000 if you go down Wetherspoon by Boxing Day. So look forward in chatting again in about 6 months' time. So thanks again, Ian.
Thank you very much. Thank you.
The Vox Markets Podcast. Nothing in this podcast is intended as investment advice, and the people in this podcast may hold positions in the stocks they talk about. Do not buy anything based solely on a tip or recommendation. Please do your own research.
Leagues Cup returns to Columbus. Your reigning Leagues Cup champion Columbus Crew are hosting 3 matches at Lower.com Field. Come out and watch the crew take on teams from Liga MX, Toluca, Puebla, and León starting July 29th. Grab your tickets now at ColumbusCrew.com and watch the best in North America battle to keep the trophy at home in Columbus. No ties, only wins. Major League Soccer versus Liga MX. Leagues Cup returns to Columbus, Ohio. Be there.
You just realized your business needed to hire someone yesterday. How can you find amazing candidates fast? Easy. Just use Indeed. Stop struggling to get your job posts seen on other job sites. With Indeed sponsored jobs, your post jumps to the top of the page for your relevant candidates, so you can reach the people you want faster. According to Indeed data, sponsored jobs posted directly on Indeed have 45% more applications than non-sponsored jobs. Don't wait any longer. Speed up your hiring right now with Indeed. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/PODKATZ13. Just go to Indeed.com/PODKATZ13 right now and support our show by saying you heard about Indeed on this podcast. Terms and conditions apply. Hiring? Indeed is all you need.